a good excuse to prevent progress.
Are you saying, then, that the IAA has other motives in this? A hidden agenda?
If they do, their agenda isn't hidden terribly well. They've denied the resources of the NEAs to the needy people of Earth. If they could, they'd deny the resources of the Belt as well. Why? Ask that, not me.
Lunar News here. You seem to be implying that the IAA is working against the best interests of Earth.
I'm not implying it. I'm saying it loud and clear. The IAA is working against the best interests of Earth.
If that's the case, who do you think they are working for?
The status quo, of course. That's what bureaucrats always support. Their goal is to keep tomorrow exactly like today, or yesterday, even, no matter how lousy today or yesterday may have been.
Panacea Informatics, you cast yourself in the position of helping the needy people of Earth, yet isn't your true goal to make billions in profits for your corporation?
My true goal is to open up the resources of the asteroid belt. We are running this mission on a shoestring. We don't intend to make a profit from this flight.
But you hope to make profits from future missions, don't you?
Certainly. But more important than that, we'll have shown that the people of Earth can tap the enormous treasures of resources waiting for us in the belt. We'll be glad to see other companies coming out to the belt to find and develop those resources.
Columbia Broadcasting, you'd be glad to see competitors going to the belt, but only after you yourself have claimed the best asteroid.
That's real flatland thinking. There are millions of asteroids in the belt. Hundreds of millions if you count the boulder-sized ones. We could claim 1,000 of them, and that wouldn't even begin to put a dent into the total number available.
You say claim an asteroid. But isn't it illegal to claim any object in space?
It's been illegal since 1967 to claim sovereignty over any body in space. But since the founding of Cellini, it has been perfectly legal to claim use of the natural resources of a celestial body.
Euronews, weren't you accused of piracy at one time? Didn't you hijack shipments of ore on their way from the moon to factories in Earth orbit?
That was a long time ago, and all those legal issues have been resolved.
But aren't you doing the same thing now? Stealing a ship and going out to claim resources that rightfully belong to the entire human race?
Look, pal, I own this ship. 1/3 of it, at least. And those resources out in the belt won't do the entire human race one diddly-squat goddamn iota's worth of good if somebody doesn't go out there and start developing them.
Is it true that Star Power 1 runs on fusion rockets?
Yes. For more about the Duncan Drive, you should talk to Lyle Duncan, who headed the team that built this propulsion system. He's at the University of Glasgow.
Are you really going to be able to reach the asteroid belt in 2 weeks?
If we accelerate at 1/6 G halfway and then decelerate to our destination, yes, 2 weeks.
Global News, do you think this stunt will help the price of Astro Manufacturing stock?
You must be a stockholder. Yes, if we're successful, I think Astro's price should climb considerably. But that's just my guess. I'm in enough trouble with the IAA, I wouldn't want the GEC's regulators on my back, too.
Global News. Now, how many people are on this ship with you? Could you introduce them?
Leaning back in his reclining chair as he watched the interview, Martin Humphreys felt whipsawed by his emotions. Try as he might to remain calm, he seethed inwardly with cold fury at Dan Randolph and Amanda Cunningham. Yet, when Amanda appeared on the wall screen, sitting at the ship's control panel alongside Pancho Lane, looking properly businesslike in her flight coveralls and her hair pinned up, His anger melted in the light from her eyes. "How could you?" he silently asked Amanda. "I offered you everything and you turned your back on me. How could you?" After hardly a minute of seeing her on screen, he abruptly snapped the broadcast off. The wall screen went blank. "It's over and done with," he told himself as he called up his appointments calendar on his desk screen. "Put it behind you." Grimly, he searched for the date of the next quarterly meeting of Astro Manufacturing's board of directors. He marked the date in red. "Randolph will be dead by then. I'll be able to pick his bones and snap up Astro for a song. They'll all be dead by then. Her too." Furious at the way his hands trembled, Humphreys called up his most reliable dating service and began scrolling through the videos of the women who were available and ready to please him. None of them were as desirable as Amanda, he realized. But he began making his choices anyway.
Outward Bound.
An adenoidal woman lamented lost love as country music twanged softly in the bridge of Star Power One. "That was some performance you put on," said Pancho. She was sitting in the command pilot's seat at the instrument panel. Dan was in the right-hand seat, beside her, separated by a bank of control knobs and rocker switches. He saw that half the touch screens on the panel had been personalized by Pancho. They showed data against backgrounds of the Grand Canyon, sleek acrobatic aircraft, even muscular male models smilingly reclining on the sunny beaches. "The interview?" Dan laughed softly. "I could have predicted 3/4 of the questions they asked, maybe more." He stared out at the view through the wide glass-steel port that ran the length of the instrument panel and wrapped around its sides. To his left, behind Pancho, was the sun, its brilliance toned down by the port's heavy tinting, but still bright enough to dominate the sky. It made Pancho look as if she had a halo ringing her close-cropped hair. The zodiacal light stretched out from the sun's middle, clear across the width of the port. Dust motes scattering the sunlight, leftovers from the solar system's early days of creation. Beyond was darkness, the deep, black infinity of space. Only a few of the brightest stars shone through the port's tinting. "You really think the stock price will go up?" Pancho asked, her eyes shifting back and forth among the displays on the panel. "Already has, a couple of points," Dan said. "That's one of the reasons I did the interview." She nodded. "From what I heard afterward, the IAA wants to slap your butt in jail the instant you get back into their jurisdiction." "Wouldn't be the first time I've been in jail," Dan muttered. "Yeah, but that wouldn't do the stock any good, would it?"
"Pancho, you talk like a worried stockholder."
"I am a stockholder."
"Are you worried?"
"What, me worry?" she joked. "I got no time for worrying. But I would like to know exactly where we're heading."
"Would you? Come on, boss, you can razzle-dazzle reporters, but I know you got an asteroid all picked out. Maybe a couple of them."
"I want to get to 3 of them."
"3?
"Yep. One of each type. Stony, metallic, and carbonaceous."
"How deep into the belt will we have to go?"
"We'd better bring Fuchs into this. He's the expert." In a few minutes, the 4 of them were seated around the table in the ship's wardroom. Amanda and Fuchs on one side, Pancho and Dan on the other. A computer-generated chart of the asteroid belt was displayed on the bulkhead screen, a ragged sprinkling of colored dots between thin yellow circles representing the orbits of Mars and Jupiter.
"So you can see that the metallic asteroids," Fuchs was saying, in an almost pedantic drone, "lie mostly in the outer areas of the belt. This is a region that hasn't been explored as well as the inner zones."
"Which is why we haven't picked a specific metallic rock as yet," said Dan.
"What are we talking here?" Pancho asked.
3 AUs? 4?
4 astronomical units," Amanda replied.
"Give or take a fraction."
"And you want to head out there and scout around?" Pancho clearly looked incredulous.
"We have enough fuel for some maneuvering," Dan said.
Pulling her palm comp from her coverall pocket, Pancho said, "Some maneuvering, but at that distance, not a hell of a lot." I need a nice chunk of nickel iron, Dan said.